In a bid to drive down energy bills and prevent gas shortages, the federal government has announced gas producers in Australia's east coast will have to reserve a portion of the gas they extract for local use. Australia is one of the world's biggest LNG exporters, but according to the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, east coast gas supplies could fall well short of demand from 2028, despite there being sufficient reserves and resources for at least the next decade. Chris Bowen is the Federal Minister for Climate Change and Energy. Welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks, Barbara. Good morning.
Good morning. You say this scheme will put downward pressure, I'm quoting you there, on gas prices. Will prices actually drop?
Well, we're not saying this is a panacea or will fix all our problems, but we think Australians are right when they look at the situation that Australia is one of the world's largest gas producers and exporters, as you indicated, and yet we have forecast shortages and have had for 20 years forecast shortages, and it doesn't make any sense. Now, the policy that we announced yesterday, our preferred model, slightly oversupplies the Australian market, which is our best way of putting downward pressure on prices. Now, gas prices will be always determined by a range of fundamental factors. The cost of extraction, the gas in the Bass Strait, which is very cheap gas, is running out. There's only 12% of it left. We've been exploiting that since the 1960s, and there's only 12% left. Gas to exploit in Queensland and Northern Territory is much more expensive to get out of the ground and to move around the country. These are fundamental factors, but nevertheless, the levers the federal government has are designed to put downward pressure on prices, and we pulled that lever yesterday.
So are you saying you can guarantee this will help address shortages, but you can't guarantee it will make a difference to household bills?
Well, I can guarantee it will address shortages, and I can guarantee it's the best way we have of putting downward pressure on prices as much as possible. Obviously, prices are an element of supply and demand. If you increase supply domestically, you're putting downward pressure on prices.
This only will apply to new contracts. Is its impact then pretty limited?
Well, it's a pretty important fundamental red line. We don't believe in ripping up contracts. We don't believe in creating sovereign risk. You know, yes, it would have been better if this policy was in place 20 years ago, but it wasn't. And the second best time is today. Now, that means, though, respecting those contracts that companies have entered into with countries like Japan and Taiwan and Korea and others. We want to be a reliable supplier. But contracts are starting to come off over the next few years, as early as 2027 and the international contracts in 2030 and beyond. So this is the best way we have. And the reason we did this yesterday was also to say to companies, any contracts you enter into from today, from yesterday, will be regarded as new and will therefore have to comply with the new rules.
You spoke to our key trading partners of gas. What was their response?
Yeah, I spent last week talking to my ministerial counterparts in key countries that buy gas from us. They appreciated the fact that this was prospective. I said to them, I'm sure you understand, we're the only country in the world that exports gas that doesn't have some form of gas reservation policy. It's time to fix that. They indicated they did understand that, they appreciated the prospective nature, and they appreciated very much the ongoing engagement from the government.
Aren't there infrastructure issues that will make it difficult to get this gas to the people you want to get to have it?
Yes, there are some challenges coming. We've got to get gas to where it's consumed in the southern parts of the country more and more. The energy ministers have been working together on a model to try and make sure that AEMO has the powers to deal with that. There are various models, whether it's gas pipelines or regasification terminals. But look, yeah, basically, energy ministers have been working together. Gas has got an important role to play as we transition to renewables. It's not the answer to all our problems, as the Liberal Party claims, nor can it have no role as the Greens play. Our approach is to ensure that we have enough gas to provide a sensible support mechanism as we move very quickly to a much more renewable system. But there are heavy industry users who one day might be able to use green hydrogen but can't yet. We need to support them. There are 5 million homes that use gas to heat their homes. Many of them are electrifying, but we are not electrifying as fast as the gas sources are depleting.
Well, you're also Minister for Climate Change. Isn't there a danger that this policy will slow the transition to renewables?
No, on the contrary, gas is a very important support for renewables. Gas-fired power stations What I think is important to understand and remember is that they're very flexible. You can turn them on and you can turn them off with, you know, in some instances, 2 minutes' notice. That's not the case with coal. It's certainly not the case with nuclear. So if you've got a renewable system which might need a bit of support with what we call firming, for a few hours in the night, you can turn a gas-fired power station on. That's a very useful support to give Australians confidence as we transition to a much more renewable energy system.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. My guest is the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Chris Bowen. Just turning to the aftermath of the Bondi attack now, and the opposition leader Susan Lee has been very critical of the Prime Minister, saying he's not spending enough time with victims. And yesterday, calling out Foreign Minister Penny Wong for, she said, not shedding a single tear. What's your response?
I thought that said more about Susan Lee than it does about Penny Wong. I thought that was a disgusting element of an increasingly partisan pile-on in the wake of a national crisis. Australia has in the past come together at moments like this, whether it be the Link Cafe or Port Arthur. And oppositions have chosen not to make political points. This opposition has chosen a different path, and to Susan Lee is not the arbiter of grief or mourning. She does not get to decide how people express that mourning and that grief. And I thought, as I said, it said more about Susan Lee than it does about Penny Wong. We have a government which is dealing with this crisis. We've got a Prime Minister who is a very empathetic man who has been spending time privately with victims and dealing with this crisis, and also enrolling National Security Committee meetings, talking to premiers and dealing with it at the same time as supporting victims and their families as they choose to be. He's not going to, you know, invite himself in where a family is dealing with grief, but where he can play a role, he has been. And Susan Lee, I think, needs to reflect on her behaviour yesterday. It was pretty disgusting, and I think it shows that she is choosing to make political points out of an issue and a personal attack on someone like Penny Wong, I think, will jar pretty badly with Australians.
Setting aside those particular comments, isn't the opposition, though, tapping into the sentiment of the community? We've seen the Prime Minister say he could have done more and that he wasn't perfect. Now he said, sorry. Has the opposition got a point that perhaps the Prime Minister has initially misread this?
I think the Prime Minister has reflected no government is perfect, no person is perfect, and he's indicated that we think more can be done, it will be done. And he's dealing with the biggest terrorist attack on Australian shores in Australian history. But let me be very clear, Barbara. There are two people responsible for this attack. One is dead and one is under arrest. And let's not have a political attack divert attention from that. The political attacks on the Prime Minister, the partisan pile-on on the Prime Minister by current and former members of the Liberal and National Party in Parliament has been a diversion from the fact that we've had two terrorists. Countries around the world, governments around the world have to deal with terrorism. ISIS inspired terrorism. Now, ISIS does not believe in the existence of any nation state, whether it be Israel or Palestine or Australia. They believe in a caliphate. That is not a rational approach. We are not dealing with rational people when we're dealing with ISIS-inspired terrorism. Now, if others think they could do a better job of dealing with that irrational terrorist ideology, then that's a matter for them. This government we now have the strongest hate laws in Australian history, thanks to the Albanese government. The Abbott-Turnbull-Morrison government spent their time trying to water down our hate laws. They tried to abolish 18C, the Race Discrimination Act, which is the racial laws which stop humiliating, offending and insulting. They spent their entire time trying to water down those laws. Now they say they should be stronger. I mean, we didn't seek this partisan argument, but if they want to have a partisan argument, then the facts will be laid out as well.
Just on the issue of a royal commission, the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, has said he'll conduct a state-based royal commission, and he says it would include federal agencies. Is it your understanding that a state-based inquiry could include ASIO and the AFP?
Well, the Prime Minister's indicated we'll cooperate and we will ask our agencies to respond. And, of course, the Prime Minister and the Premier are talking about that. We will see the terms of reference of the New South Wales Royal Commission in due course. But, of course, the Commonwealth agencies will provide whatever cooperation they can to this state-based inquiry.
Chris Bowen, thank you so much for joining us.
Merry Christmas to you, Barbara, in a very difficult time for our country. I hope our listeners have as good a Christmas as they can.